I'd like to call this council and committee meeting to order. Madam Clerk, the roll call, please. Thank you. Just a few brief announcements. The first announcement is that on Saturday evening, on Hockey Night in Canada, about 11 o'clock, the announcement was made as to which communities were the 10 finalists out of 3,129 communities whose names were submitted to be named this year's Craft Hockey Bill community. I'm sad to say that despite a fantastic effort, starting with Paula Barnhart, all the way down to Joe Bird in the video that Councillor Passero and I so prominently featured in, I hope that wasn't the reason we didn't get selected.
We're hearing that.
Yeah, it just occurred to me. So we've at least had a good opportunity to understand what it takes and how many communities actually do covet being named Craft Hockeyville. So hopefully next year we'll have better success and we'll take another run at it. On Saturday, I attended the 21st annual Midwinter Powwow at the Fort Erie Native Friendship Center. It was a very, very well attended event. Many individuals from the community at large, non-Aboriginals, but some fantastic answers, a lot of activity, number of booths, and it was really very quite impressive. And it's always interesting to hear the stories of the Aboriginal culture and how much it fits into our culture from a different, little different perspective of how much we can all learn from each other. On Saturday coming, I wanted to make the announcement, and maybe I could, I don't know whether you wanted to do this, Councillor Passero, or whether you want me to make reference to the fact that we've got kids, Bowl for Kids' Sake on Saturday. You've got enough information there. Sure, why don't you go ahead?
Thank you, Mayor Kopp. An annual event that Mayor and Council are always pleased to participate in, as well as town staff when they're able. It's the annual Bowl for Kids' Sake, the number one fundraiser for the Big Brothers Big Sisters organization that serves South Niagara, including Fort Erie. We have a number of teams represented this year, some who've participated many years in the past, some new teams as well. Looking forward to it is a superheroes theme, so we'll see who is there in costume. But a great event, as always, and I know that councillors are participating as well, so I'm looking forward to it. Great events, they do great things in our community. Apart from the one-on-one mentoring, which is what they're predominantly known for, where they match up bigs with littles, but they also do some great programming as well in our local elementary school. So pleased to be a proud supporter and happy that Mayor and some of my colleagues are joining me on Saturday. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Passero. So that takes us to disclosures of pecuniary interest. Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. Under number 7, consent agendas 7.2, CDS 24-2016, I'm related to the individuals in question.
That was CDS. We'll remove that from the consent agenda package before we proceed with that. Are there any other disclosures? If there aren't any, there are no public notices this evening, but there are some public meetings. And the first public meeting relates to the property rezoning town-initiated amendment to the Bay Beach parking lot at 4152 Erie Road. And this will be an opportunity for the, this is pursuant to statute, a member of the staff will provide some background with respect to the proposed amendment, and then members of the public will be given an opportunity to address council with respect to the proposed amendment. Ms. Dolch, I see that you're here, so I'm presuming that you're going to be speaking to us on this. Would you please come forward? It's on now.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Worship. Council authorized initiation of an amendment to the town's comprehensive zoning bylaw for the lands located at 4152 Erie Road, the Bay Beach parking lot located north of Erie Road, on the east side of Eastwood Avenue, and on the west side of Schooley Road. This amendment was to permit apartments, street townhouses, block townhouses, in addition to the current commercial uses permitted in the general commercial zones. The zoning bylaw amendment is also proposing site-specific regulations to ensure the future development of the site adheres to the Bay Beach Urban Design Guidelines recently approved by Council as part of the Bay Beach Master Plan. Notification of the March 7th public meeting was provided in accordance with the requirements of the Planning Act by placing a notice in the newspaper on February 11, 2016. Unfortunately, in the February 11, 2016 advertisement, the address header and other information was missing when the ad was sent to print. This resulted in a second advertisement being run in the February 18, 2016 edition of the Times newspaper. As the second advertisement was not provided in accordance with the timing requirements required under the Planning Act, a second public meeting will need to be held on April 4, 2016. In addition, staff also satisfied the other notification requirements that Council requires for town-initiated amendments. They provided notice of the proposed amendments on the town's website. Notice were posted on the town's Twitter, Facebook, and blog pages on February 24th and again on March 3rd. Notice of public meeting was sent to the Ridgeway, Bridgeburg, and Crystal Beach Business Improvements Associations. Notice of the amendment was advertised on the billboard at the corner of Municipal Center Drive and Garrison Road. And notice of the public meeting was posted at the library branches of the Leisure, as well as the Leisure Flex, the museum, and the Town Hall atrium. No individual property owners were directly impacted by the proposed amendment, i.e. a change to the zoning of their property. Therefore, no individual hand-delivered or mailing notices were required in this case. This is an aerial photograph of the subject property as well as the surrounding area. The subject land is located in the Crystal Beach neighborhood. The subject property is located on the north side of Erie Road. The surrounding land uses consist of the following. To the north, single detached residential dwellings. To the south, Erie Road and the Bay Beach property. To the west, Eastwood Avenue and the town's Bay Beach parking lot. And to the east, Schooley Road, a commercial operation and single detached residential dwellings. This slide shows the natural heritage features on and in the vicinity of the subject property as identified in the official plan. The subject property as illustrated is within a potential natural heritage corridor. Given that the subject property is within a highly developed area, the property does not currently contribute any way as a corridor. The Town of Fort Erie official plan designates the property as a site-specific policy area number 4. This area was subject to a development strategy for Bay Beach. Part 3 of the official plan development strategy relates to the subject lands. And Part 3 stated that the lands were to be sold for residential use. And it was subject to the development of a long-term parking strategy. The town's official plan also identified that any alterations to the above noted strategy would require an amendment to the town's official, not require an amendment to the town's official plan, but rather changes could be done in consultation with the public and community focus groups. During the Bay Beach Master Plan process, extensive consultation with the general public as well as a number of interest groups was conducted. Through this consultation, consultants arrived at a consensus-driven concept, which also considered a parking strategy for the area. The Bay Beach concept is now to replace the existing official plan development strategy moving forward. The Bay Beach Master Plan concept proposes commercial and residential uses on the subject lands, such as a motel, hotel, apartment, and townhouses. The Bay Beach Master Plan also created urban design guidelines to be implemented as part of the development of the site. The proposed amendment incorporates the vision for these lands into a site-specific zoning. The subject lands are currently zoned General Commercial C2 Zone, which permits a variety of commercial uses. The proposed rezoning will change the site to a site-specific general commercial C2 zone, permitting, in addition, apartments, street townhouses, and block townhouses, as well as the current commercial uses. This slide shows an illustrative concept for the subject property to show how the site may develop, given the permitted uses and site-specific provisions. This plan shows a 35-unit apartment complex with surface parking on site. This is a concept, and the site could develop differently. The amendments, however, for the RM2 zone, which permits the apartment, is as follows. 0 meters for Eastwood Avenue, 0 meters for Erie Road, and 0 meters for Schooley Road is the building setbacks in that location. We have a building setback of 7.5 meters from the northerly residential zone, and as well in both northern residential zones. We also have a 6 meter wide ingress egress into the property driving lane. We have a 1.5 meter setback from that driving lane to the residential zone. We also have a 10 meter landscape coverage requirement. We have a 0 meter setback from the covered parking area, as this concept shows covered parking below. And we also have parking to be permitted behind the main front face of the building. In addition, generally, the lot area must equal to 40 square meters per unit. Lot coverage, there's no maximum. 4 stories are permitted on the site. The roof slope of any building is 1 meter in height every 5 meters in depth. On and off-site parking is permitted. And the apartments will be subject to the established Bay Beach Urban Design Guidelines. And there will be no planting strips. This slide shows an illustrative concept for the subject property, how the site may develop given the permitted uses and site-specific provisions. This plan shows a 51-room hotel with parking on site. Again, this is just a concept. The site could develop differently. The amendments for the C2 zone, which permits the hotels, are as follows. A front yard a setback of 0 meters from Eastwood Avenue, a setback of 0 meters from Erie, and a setback of 0 meters from Schooley Road. A setback of 7.5 meters from the northerly residential zone, a building height of 4 stories, a landscaped area of 10%, parking has to be located behind the front face of the building, minimum setback from the covered parking, 0 meters, 6 meter ingress and egress, 3.2 square meters of open air space for open air balconies, and general provisions again are no maximum lot coverage, on and off street parking is permitted, no parking required for commercial uses, roof slope 1 meter in height to every 5 meters in depth, inns and hotels will be subject again to the Bay Beach Urban Design Guidelines. This slide shows the mixed use concept. Again, it is just a concept. It could develop differently. And the amendments for the general commercial, which permit the mixed use, are the same as the hotel and inn, which I just went through, except for one provision, and that is that dwelling units can occupy 49% of the ground floor, but they can't front on the street except for the entrance. And lastly, this concept shows a townhouse proposal. This plan shows 12-unit townhouse complex with parking on site. Again, it can develop differently. The amendments for the RM1 zone are as follows. And we're going to start with just on Erie Road, the property fronting on the Erie Road. 0 meters from Eastwood Avenue, 0 meters from Erie, 0 meters from Schooley Road, 3 meters from the northerly residential zone in this case, building height of 3 stories, parking again behind the front face of the building, again 6 meter ingress and egress, a minimum distance between buildings is 6 meters except 3 meters between end walls and 6 meters between an end wall and a rear wall. Privacy area either needs to be 3 meters in depth or by open air balcony. Now, properties fronting on Eastwood, we have a 4.5 meter setback front from the dwelling and 6 meters to the garage. We have a minimum setback of 3 meters to the residential zone for the ones fronting onto Eastwood and a minimum rear yard setback of 7.5 meters. These townhouses that front onto Eastwood will have a maximum height of 2 stories. again, some of the general provisions for both concepts in terms of Eastwood and Erie. The minimum landscape for block townhouses is 5% and 30% for street townhouses, 60 units per hectare. Lot coverage of 70%, a roof slope of 1 meter in height to every 5 meter in depth, no planting strip requirements, and the townhouses will be subject to the established Bay Beach Urban Design Guidelines. This is a view of the subject property looking east from Eastwood Avenue. This is a view of the subject property looking west from Schooley Road. And this is a view of the subject property looking north from Erie Road. This public meeting is to obtain the views and opinions of the area residents. This concludes my presentation.
Thank you very much, Ms. Dolch. Do any members of council have any questions of Ms. Dolch at this point? Hunter Luberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Ms. Dolch, just one quick question. The ingress and egress, is that going to be accessible from both Eastwood and Schooley, like a laneway between the two streets?
Through you to the councilor, that is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Any other councilors? Thank you very much, Ms. Dolch. So at this point, if there's anyone who wishes to speak with respect to or address council with respect to this proposed amendment, you may come forward. I would ask you to provide your full name and address for the record. Mr. Poole? Good evening.
Good evening, everybody. Council, Mayor.
Full name and address?
3011 Red Stock Road, Crystal Beach.
James Poole.
UHL. So anything, I'm sure you know what I'm going to say. I've seen it. I got no problem with it. Only when I hear zero for front setback, side yard, and stuff like that, I don't understand how this happens. Like, my question is that so you change all the zoning on this property so it's more so somebody will buy it? Is that the idea going down to zero, where the setback is supposed to be three? It's supposed to be three in the side.
Well, I think Ms. Dolch can speak to that, but the idea of rezoning is it so that it will be more attractive to a purchaser and it will fit in line with the type of development that we would prefer to have there, and was part of the process when we went through the master plan process.
Yeah, but do you think we should be down to zero?
Well, if you go through all of the downtown areas, that's zero. So this will be a building that will,
I agree with that,
basically front on the municipal road allowance. And that's because we're trying to intensify that particular area with respect to this particular type of use. And if Ms. Dolch, when Mr. Poole is finished, if you wanted to respond as well to better articulate that, by all means, I'd love that.
The thing is, like you say, I walk down there in the summertime and you got the sidewalk, you got everybody standing out there smoking, you got to walk on the street. You know, to me, I don't know how we got to zero. Can we at least go 1 meter or a half a meter or something so we have a little green space between the sidewalk? Like, zero is like it's open house in this town. You just change the rules, come on in, do what you want. That's what my feeling. You know how I feel about that. It's just that I feel when we're down, I was surprised I seen zero. I was home looking at this stuff, and I was kind of like, that's like, where do you push the snow in the wintertime? Where does it go? This guy's sitting in his house and looking out the window, everybody's walking around tapping on his window when they're walking on the sidewalk? Because their house is right against the sidewalk. They could build a townhome. So you're right there. You're right there.
Well,
that's just, you know, I'm thinking, you know, you think about that. You're in your house. How would you like to have people walking zero clearance? You got no say, nothing in front of your house.
Yeah, there's the whole road isn't taken up by sidewalk and road. I mean, the whole road allowance isn't going to be taken up by road and sidewalk. But this allows the building to be constructed to the limit of the property.
Right, but you go down the street, Erie Road, the sidewalks are right up against the buildings, right? So, and basically that's what you're saying, that you can do that. That's what I disagree with, the zero. But, yeah. Okay, you say zero, but we're going to be seeing the sidewalk and the person, we're going to have a half a meter or something. Some kind of green space between that sidewalk and the building. So if it's got to come out of our property, our town property, I haven't got a problem with that. But, you know, that's my thing with this. I don't disagree with the zero stuff.
I will give Ms. Dolch an opportunity to address that. Did you have some other points that you wanted to speak to us about, Mr.
Oh, I hope you saw it moving forward. That's what I'm hoping.
Okay, perfect.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Dolch, did you want to speak to the zero setbacks?
Thank you, Your Worship. When we proposed the zero-meter setback, we did so with regard to the concept proposed by the consultants at the Bay Beach during the Bay Beach study. What their vision was to have something close to the street to provide that urban-type setting that they were looking for close to the Bay Beach park, per se. And in this case, it is just it's a minimum. Developers can come in and set it back and provide additional green space if they wish to do so. It really would be market driven, but ideally that would be our goal, is to have it closer to the street front to encourage a more pedestrian friendly environment.
Okay, thank you. Would anyone else like to speak to council with respect to this matter? Please come forward, sir. And again, could we have your name and address for the record, please?
Okay, it's Mike Egan, 3763 Crystal Beach Drive.
Please proceed.
Okay, thank you, Mayor Redkop and Council and friends in the audience here. I've been a resident in Crystal Beach for 43 years. I've lived on the lakefront as a child, from former Buffalo residents for all my life. And I've attended all the planning sessions and been part of that, so I know what it's sort of all about. One thing they didn't do at those planning sessions, though, is to make an option of selling this. That was always a built-in factor. So I'll say vision. The 84-page Crystal Beach master plan said that they wanted to proposed a green space with tree-lined green space all along Erie Road from Bridge Road down to the beach. Well, it's nice for maybe all those other places, but it doesn't seem like it fits this because, as the previous speaker said, the building is right smack up against the property line. So it doesn't really afford green space, but we have green space allotted in our parking lot, but you'd think something that was more, I'll call it residential, ought to at least have some green space, and this doesn't. So the question is, with the zero setbacks and the skimpy sides, does this really bring about anything positive to enhance the neighborhood? And it's pretty easy to say, at least for me, it doesn't. The other thing is, what it's going to do is create a parking problem for the residents in the area, because with one parking space, at least for the apartment units, they're going to have overflow parking whenever Thanksgiving comes along or their friends come over. It's going to just create a greater problem for the residents in any time of the season, because there's just no parking. One parking space per unit is crazy. I have apartments. I've been a full-time landlord for 37 years, but our apartments in Buffalo, because that's where I came from originally. And we have green yards, trees, bushes, rose bushes, and hedges. It's a family-looking place, and family-looking places. I had 43 units altogether before, but we cut back. Most people have two cars, they have boats and friends, and this doesn't fit the picture at all. It's unuser-friendly. Also, this is called to be a set of precedent for future development along the area. And if it is, we're just going to have row upon row, I don't think will ever happen, though, because I personally don't think this will sell, of, you could call them row houses, right down the line. It doesn't create a good picture of what Crystal Beach really is. A few years ago, the council voted down a proposed 8-story condo on the river, say down toward Jarvis Street, because it didn't fit the character of the neighborhood. Well, I think we're going right through the same process here. The sale of the parking lot is supposed to be raising money And it would. But right now, as it is with the 46 spaces, it should bring in $23,000 a year forever. And you could call that a gift that keeps on giving. It's kind of a catchy name for Kodak film, Kodak cameras. And what other park in Fort Erie actually brings in money? Nothing does. And you could even say, why should it? It's nice to get money, but does it have to? Let's use that word. If they want money, yeah, let's sell off a slice of one of the other parks in Fort Erie. There's probably other town property you could sell, because Crystal Beach has a limited amount of space and a lot of people. It's a pretty dense area. There's really not much space for the people for recreation activities. If this was actually a means of just raising money, there's other ways of getting money, and there's a lot of smart people here who could figure out how to do it. So the real problem isn't raising money. The real problem is parking. So there are a lot of alternatives. And local residents are the ones who are really going to pay the price, because with this tight parking, if it was apartments, the overflow parking for these people is going to go out into the neighborhood. Also, we're missing 100 spaces if the two lots are sold, both the south lot and the north lot. So there's going to be 100 more people looking for spaces. And if I was one of them, or a person who wanted to park, I'd walk as far as Glen Spring Road, because it's, so what? If it takes you 10 minutes, you save $10. It's easy. You just leave your house 10 minutes early. It wouldn't make any difference. And it would be a burden for the people who live in the neighborhood. That's the real problem. These people are our brothers and sisters, and we ought to be treating them that way, I think. So my proposal is, what if we were to delay the sale of this property for 1 year to really see how the parking worked out? Do we really have to be in such a rush to get everything done in the beach development? Probably not, because it isn't going to happen all at once anyhow. There is another plan that I would propose, but none of them are easy, probably. And that would be to build or to propose the building of cottage-type houses all along Erie Road. And the reason I say this is because commercial property, or commercial businesses, we'll say commercial property or businesses, is tough to get a mortgage on. Residential is really easy, but commercial, the property has to pay for itself, and it's more expensive. And most of the people, I think, who run little businesses would have a hard time even getting a commercial mortgage. In fact, I would bet on it. We have commercial mortgages on our apartment buildings, and it costs a lot of money to get them, but we're selling them, but we're selling them and holding a mortgage. So it saves the buyers a lot of money, a real lot of money, and it makes it more attractive. Okay, another example of a problem is there's on Hibbard and Prospect Point Road, they have those townhouses that have been sitting there for 3 years because there's no parking. It's the craziest thing I ever heard of, but I don't know how they'll ever sell them. They'll probably have to bulldoze them, unless they get people who come from Toronto and aren't used to driving cars, but their friends will drive cars. The other thing is Singing Siren Restaurant. Three very professional owners, proprietors, will say, we're running that restaurant, and it's sitting there empty right now, because commercial places like that are hard to make a go of it. And I think anybody on Erie Road commercially isn't going to make it. A couple of places will, just like the South Coast restaurant.
Mr. Egan, I'm going to ask you to stick to the purpose of the meeting.
Yep, okay. So I would just say, I would consider, please propose delaying the sale for 1 year, seeing how the parking worked out, and go from there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Egan. Before you go, are there any members of council that have any questions of Mr. Egan? Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Mayor Lickup. Thank you, Mr. Egan, for joining us tonight. Are you aware of the town's recently adopted parking strategy for the Crystal Beach neighborhood?
I am, and I don't see how it's going to work.
To elaborate on that?
Well, there's, I'll call it mini lots, or proposed areas for mini lots throughout the town, throughout the area there. But, you know, those are, they talked about long-term parking strategy. It has to be a short-term parking strategy, because what if Crystal Beach actually develops, and it will in time, those lots are going to disappear. The parking at the hillside, what would it call that? The hillside cottages, we'll call it.
The Cottages Hill Association.
Yeah. That stuff, even though we have a called proposal to park there, what if these people run out of money and they say, you know what, this parking, this area is very valuable. We better dump this stuff and bank our money because it's a better way of living. So that's not permanent either. And who's going to want to sit in when these little mini parking lots collect parking for, you know, six cars or seven cars? It's not realistic. It might work for a little while, but it isn't going to work. The people in the neighborhood are still going to pay the price for parking.
If I could, Mayor Redekop,
yes, please.
You had mentioned that you don't think it's a good idea to sell off this property. How do you in turn suggest we fund the portion of the Bay Beach Master Plan that we have attributed to the disposal of this property? I know you'd mentioned selling off parkland in some other neighborhood. Yeah. Do you really think that's a realistic proposition that would go over well in the community?
No, but it's the same thing of selling off our mini property in Crista Beach. Nobody likes selling off their property, but we have a little space. The rest of the town has a big space. So we didn't get opposition and nobody liked it. But you know what? There's a lot of smart people here. You're one of them. How about this theater for the high school? They're going and collecting money for that. If that can happen, I know that you smart people in the back here could find a way of doing it. And you know what? It does bring in, it would bring in $23,000 a year every year for the next 100 years. That's a pretty good deal.
One final question, Mayor Redekop. You had mentioned a couple of times the proposal that you'd attended the different strategy meetings. And I take it from your comments tonight that you're not necessarily in favor of everything that was proposed because these are the implementation strategies.
Well, most of the things I am. It's just that we never had an option of not selling that the property. It was built in. You never had a chance. I did say not selling it. I did propose that. But it was a built-in factor which was given to them. They had to work around it, work with it. Let's put it that way. So it came into the package, but it wasn't their plan. It wasn't anybody's plan. It was probably someone in this room or in the town who proposed it.
Very eerie. If I could, since you didn't let me finish my question,
would
you suggest then, from having attended all of those meetings, that the plan as it is proposed was near unanimous in support?
It probably was. But in fact, it was unanimous because we couldn't do anything about the parking. It was built in.
Thank you for your comments.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other counselors? Thank you very much, Mr. Egan.
Okay, thank you, Mayor Redekop. Oh, you want a copy of this?
Yes, if you could.
Sure.
Is there anyone else who wishes to address council with respect to this proposed zoning change? If not, then I'll declare this public meeting closed. And we'll proceed to the next one, which relates to plan of subdivision and property rezoning regarding Village Creek Phase 3 in Stevensville. And I see you're up again, Ms. Dolch, so I presume that you'll be providing us with some background.
Thank you, Your Worship. An application for draft plan of subdivision and zoning bylaw amendment has been received for the proposed Village Creek Phase 3, formerly Bakersfield subdivision, on the west side of Village Creek Drive and Lower Coach Road, south of West Main and east of Ott Road. The proposed plan of subdivision includes 22 street townhouses and 53 single detached dwellings fronting onto a public road. Notification of March 7, 2016 public meeting was provided in accordance with the requirements of the Planning Act by placing an ad in the February 11, 2016 edition of the Fort Erie Times newspaper. In addition, property owners within 120 meters were mailed notice of complete application and public meeting on February 10, 2016. This is an aerial photograph of the subject property as well as the surrounding area. The subject lands are located in the Stevensville neighborhood near West Main and Ott Road. The subject property is located on the south side of West Main Street, west of Village Creek Drive and Lower Coach Road, and east of Ott Road. The surrounding land uses consist of the following. To the north are single detached residential dwellings and West Main Street. To the south, CN Rail. To the east, to the west, single detached residential dwellings and Ott Road. And to the east, Village Creek Phase 2 subdivision, which includes single detached dwellings and townhouse dwellings. This slide shows the natural and cultural heritage features on and in the vicinity of subject property. The subject property as identified in the official plan, there are no natural heritage features on the subject site. The Stevensville, the town's official plan is zoned low density residential. The Stevensville secondary plan, which is adopted by council but not yet approved by the region, designates the majority of the site as low density residential as well. The single detached dwellings are permitted by the Stevensville secondary plan, and the intensification of the subdivision is encouraged by policies of the plan. Townhouse development is not permitted use within the low density designation. However, the secondary plan does permit townhouse dwellings subject to an amendment to the zoning bylaw, which we're going through. This, however, again, is not an approved PAMP plan by the region, and the town's official plan permits both types of uses. The majority of the subject lands are currently zoned residential to R2 188 zone, which permits smaller single detached dwellings with smaller floor areas for 2 and 2.5 story dwellings. The remaining lands are zoned R2A zone, which permits 40-foot lot frontages. The application proposes to change the zoning of the property, where single detached dwellings are proposed, and they're shown on part one, to a site-specific residential R2 zone, recognizing an increased lot coverage from 30, 35, and 40% to 50%, a reduced front yard setback from 6 meters to 4.5 meters to the front face of the dwelling and 6 meters to the garage, a reduced interior side yard setback from 1.2 and 1.5 to 1 meter, a reduced rear yard from 8 meters to 7.5, an increase in the maximum building height from 2 stories and 9 meters to 2.5 stories and 10.5 meters. The application proposes to change the zoning of the property where, again, single detached dwelling are proposed to a site-specific residential 2A R2A zone, which is shown as part 2 on the plan. The rezoning application was submitted before the changes to the zoning bylaw were changed by council recently. So the applicant requested a reduced front yard setback of 4.5 meters to the front face of the dwelling, 6 meters to the front face of the garage. However, this request to change the bylaw is no longer required, as the bylaw now permits a front yard setback of 3 meters to the dwelling and 6 meters to the garage. Also, the applicants requested an increase in the maximum building height to 2.5 stories and 10.5 meters. Again, this is permitted by the recent bylaw changes, therefore no amendment is required in part 2. The application also proposes to change the zoning on the portion of the property where townhouses are proposed to a site-specific residential RM1 zone, and that's part 3 shown on the plan. They are proposing a reduced front yard setback from 6.7 meters to 4.5 meters to the front face of the dwelling and 6 meters to the garage. However, again, this request is no longer required, as the bylaw has since changed, as our bylaw now permits a front yard setback of 4 meters to the dwelling and 6 meters to the garage. A minimum side yard from 3 meters to 1.5 meters for an end unit they're proposing, and 0 meters to a common wall. Also, an increase to the maximum lot coverage from 40 to 50% was requested. With the recent bylaw changes, part of this is no longer needed, as the coverage for the interior street townhouses permit 60%. However, for the exterior street townhouses, we do need to apply this amendment of 50% coverage, as 40 is only permitted. And that would affect one unit in this case. This slide shows the existing official plan, known as Bakersfield Subdivision, which was which originally consisted of 68 single detached dwelling lots. This slide shows the proposed plan of subdivisions for the subject property. The plan shows 53 single detached dwelling units shown in pale yellow and 22 townhouse dwelling units shown in orange, fronting onto a public road. The frontages and lot sizes vary on the plan, but single detached dwelling lots along the interface of existing residential lands are approximately 50 to 60 feet in frontage, and the interior lots are generally 40 feet for the singles. This is a view of the property looking west from Village Creek Drive. This is a view of the property looking east from Mott Road. This public meeting is to obtain the opinions and views of the area residents. A future recommendation report will be brought forward to Council and Committee to consider any questions or concerns raised by the public meeting. This concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Dulge. You gave us a whole bunch of numbers with respect to the three particular zonings in this existing plan of subdivision and the changes that are going to be made, some of which have already been accommodated, requested, but already accommodated by some general zoning changes that we approved recently. So I'm not sure how reflective the report, page 3 of the report is, but could you summarize just what it is that's going to need to be changed that wouldn't come into effect with recent changes so that I can get an understanding of how much further the developer is wanting us to alter what we've already agreed to alter?
Okay. For sure. Okay, so on part one, nothing has changed, and as I have the plan up there. So again, they're asking for a maximum lot coverage of 50%, where 40% is permitted. Let me just
part one is zoned what?
It's going to be rezoned to a site-specific R2 zone. That's what they're proposing. So right now, our bylaw allows for a lot coverage, depending on the size of the lot, of 30, 35, or 40%. They want to go to 50%. They also are asking for a reduced front yard setback on part one from 6 meters to 4.5 to the front face of the dwelling and 6 meters to the front face of the garage. They're also asking for a reduced interior side yard setback from 1.2 and 1.5 meters because it's based on height to 1 meter. They're also requesting a reduced rear yard from 8 meters to 7.5 meters and an increased building height from 2 stories and 9 meters to 2.5 stories and 10.5 meters.
If I could just stop you there, will any of those be automatically affected because of the changes that we made to the R2 zoning, or are these further refinements being requested, the ones that you've mentioned and that are reflected in the report?
No, these will remain the same. What they've asked for in their application will remain the same. There was no changes to the R2 zone. There was only more restrictions, but no more allowances, because originally the R2 zone was normally used for existing subdivisions, R1 and R2. What we changed was R2A, R3, RM1, which are normally new subdivision zones. But when they made their application, they made the application for an R2 zone.
Okay, so what's on page 3 of the report? Those are all requested changes that would be new changes.
Yes.
And is that true then for the others on page 3? In other words, if it appears on page 3, is that something that's not automatically being affected, that these are additional requests?
On page 3 for the part 2 and part 3, they are affected by the changes of our bylaw, and that's why it's being brought up for both part 2 and part 3. So I can go over those.
You would for the R2A?
Okay. So the part 2, like I said, they originally requested 2 amendments to our zoning. They no longer require any of them.
Right.
So they're permitted as of right just going to an R2A zone. They still need to rezone because, as I said earlier, that portion of the property is currently zoned R2-188. So they do require the amendment to an R2A zone, but they won't require any site-specific amendments to that. Part 3, which is our RM1 zone, again, they will require rezoning, but there are some changes. So the front yard setback they originally asked for is no longer required. So what they do require is a reduction to the interior side yard from 3 meters to 1.5 for an end unit and 0 meters to a common wall. And they also require a maximum lot coverage of 50% for an exterior street townhouse. That's it.
That's 40.
That's it for that one.
For the current zoning, that would be a 40% coverage?
The current zoning is 40, yes, 40%. And, yeah, 40% for interior.
Right.
For exterior, sorry.
Do any other councillors have any questions of Ms. Dolch? Very much. I'm sorry, Councillor Lubberts. You're going to have to be faster.
Well, I was just thinking. So now that...
Okay, fair enough.
I speak a little slower than I speak. Ms. Dolch, just going to part three, it looks to me, I'm trying to grasp all this, all these numbers. Part three is where they really want to make all the changes, other than... Is that where we're going with this here? Because
for you to the councillor, actually, I think more changes are being proposed with part one, which is the R2 zone. They're proposing, as you can see, the arrow to part one is proposing 5 changes, whereas the part three we only have 2 changes in the end.
So let's go to part one, the original subdivision was designed with the old setbacks in mind. That's, am I correct there?
For you to the councillor, that's correct. They did have a site-specific amendment, which was the R2-188 zone, and the only change they had to that zone was a reduction to the minimum floor area requirement.
But the old subdivision, that's the way it was laid out. So now it's been sold.
Correct.
Now we have a new owner that's proposing to make some changes. And can we not go to the new owner and say, well, here's the changes that we've made to our bylaw recently, and you're going to have to comply to these? Because now we're getting right back in the same position where we've created a new bylaw to accommodate all the requests for setback changes, and now we're being asked to change the setbacks.
Okay, Councillor Lubberts, at this point, I take what your point is. I think that's a discussion that we should be having when we get to the actual report. You do have a question in there, but I think you're getting into an area where it's more appropriate for you to be discussing that when we get to the report on the agenda. But the question was, the changes that are being proposed actually make the lots smaller and the setbacks are reduced for part one.
That is correct. And if I can just answer quickly, what's happened is, as I said, this application came in before those changes were done to the bylaw. If they would have come in now, we would have at that time perhaps recommended some new subdivision zoning, which is the R2A, the RM1, and the R3 zoning that we have in place now, which allows for a little more flexibility for new subdivisions. But in this case, they haven't done that, but they have considered the R2 along the interfaces, which I think is important because they are larger lot frontages than what the R2A would allow. And in this case, there are some established neighborhoods on the periphery of this subdivision. So I do feel it's important that we stayed with the R2.
Councillor Lubberts, back to you with respect to the presentation.
No, that's fine. We'll discuss this when the report comes forward.
Okay. Any other questions Ms. Dolch? If there aren't any, then thank you very much. And I will provide an opportunity then for members of the audience. Is there anyone here who wishes to address council with respect to this? Mr. Poole? Assuming you haven't changed address, will be the same address as you gave us before. 3811 Rebstock.
The reason I came tonight was Crystal Beach saying not this. I agree with Mr. Lubberts. You got to look at the picture here. People bought those houses in that subdivision years ago expecting all their neighbors to have the same size lot in that subdivision. Now, like you said, I never knew this. This property was sold from Park Lane Homes. Somebody else has bought it. Now they decide they want to make it smaller. Prime example, I live on Rebstock Road. There's a Park Lane Homes owns that property. Now they say, okay, Mr. Subdivision, a new guy comes and buys it. Instead of having 22 townhomes, let's jam in 40. And that's what you're doing. You're saying the setbacks, I didn't know you guys changed the bylaw. I was surprised it was changed down to 3 meters, but whatever, we gotta live with it. But if that's the bylaw, you guys change it, you shouldn't be allowing no more. It's over. You shouldn't be saying, well, I want to get an extra 10 lots. When they buy the property, that's what it is. You know what I'm saying? It's getting out of hand in this town. And like the gentleman in the back said, just drive down Hibbert Street, wherever it is, in Ridgeway, and we all know those houses will never sell. I know they take the for sale sign one day, the one side is sold, the next day the next one sold on the other side. And that's way, they were there before my mother passed away, and that's 5 years now. And I say, I don't think it's fair for people to live in that subdivision when you think about it. They should be all here. I don't think they realize it, that they all have a certain size lots, and all of a sudden we can have these houses jammed close to the street, smaller. It's not fair to them either when they bought their property. Thank you.
Before you go, any members of council have any questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Poole.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to address council? Please come forward. Looks like Mr. Jardine. Could you take your hat off, please, sir? Thank you.
Mayor and council, when the first subdivision came up 8 years ago, I was on chemotherapy for a breathing problem. And the reason being, I'm one of the first persons by a cesspool. The cesspool it was only designed for certain amounts of people. But you had over 30 people from Stevensville 8 years ago that came before Mayor Redekoff and told them that there's limitations on the cesspool. These limitations on the cesspool were put on by an Ontario Municipal Board Judge, A.J. Chapman, who said that there will be no extensions to any other sewer lines. Now, what we've had for the past 8 years, because you didn't listen, we've had sewage flooding of all the sewer lines in Stevensville. And what the town's been doing is dumping raw sewage into Black Creek.
Mr. Jardine, do you have any comments with respect to the public meeting that we're holding right now?
Which relates to the planning? When are we going to have the cesspool shut down? Because this thing is illegal.
Could we have
and you know that. And as a lawyer, ignorance of the law is not a defense. You've been told. You have a copy in your archives.
Okay, Mr. Jardine, could we have your address for the record, please?
Pardon?
Could we have your address for the record, please?
3733 Black Creek Road.
Thank you.
Stevensville.
And do you have
LOS.
Anything, and is there anything further that you wish to say with respect to this?
I just want to say...
plan of subdivision and property rezoning.
Pardon?
With respect to the public meeting that deals with this plan of subdivision and property rezoning. You have something to say about that?
I'm for development. Okay. I just don't like having sewage dumped into Black Creek, and I don't like spending thousands of dollars having lawyers and going to the Ontario Municipal Board and finding that two people don't obey the Ontario Municipal Board rulings.
Okay.
So this
Anything
will
further?
End up anyway with the Ontario Municipal Board. And contempt of court is a serious thing.
Mr. Jardine, do you have anything to say with respect to the changes in the zoning that are being proposed by the development?
No.
Good. Thank you. Any members of council have any questions of Mr. Jardine? Thank you very much, sir.
Okay.
Is there anyone else who wishes to speak with respect to this matter? Yes, please. We'll do the lady first and then the gentleman. Could we have your name and address for the record, please?
Good evening. My name is Carmela Agro. I'm from Upper Canada Consultants. 81 Martindale Road in St. Catharines.
Please proceed.
I'm representing the agent of this property, the owner of this property. I also have our engineer, Adam Keene, from Upper Canada Consultants here. And we'd just like to thank town staff, council, and that we agree with everything that was written in the information report. Back to council for the final recommendation. And if there's any questions, we're here to answer them.
Thank you. Do any members of council have any questions of, it's Agro, is your last name?
Agro, yes.
Yes, of Ms. Agro. Thank you very much. And, sir, would you like to come forward? Good evening.
Good evening. My name's Jonathan McTaggart. I'm at 4033 West Main Street in Stevensville. And I just had some questions regarding part one, and that when they that they want to make these, looks like the houses closer to the back of the property line, and also a meter and a half higher, and that feels to me like they're encroaching on my, you know, they're now closer encroaching into my property and the use of my backyard. I want to know, what was the town's bylaws regarding fences, and if they build their house a meter and a half taller, can I build my fence a meter and a half taller? Does anybody know what the fence requirements are?
Well, the fence bylaw provides for 2 meters, I believe. But is there any allowance, Mr. Brady, to increase the height of your fence if you've got a neighbor who's building a higher house behind you?
No, Mr. Mayor, there's no allowance within the bylaw to do that. There would need to be a variance to the bylaw.
So if you wanted to build a higher fence, you'd have to get the municipality's permission.
Okay.
Do you have any further comments?
No, it was just I wanted you guys to contemplate that. If it was your yards, how would you feel?
For sure.
Thank you.
Before you go, any members of council have any questions? Thank you very much, Mr. McTaggart. For anyone else who wishes to address council with respect to this particular matter? Yes, sir. Please come forward. I think we're running out of people, so could we have your name and address, sir?
My name's Bill Mullen. I live at 2506 Ott Road. My property backs directly onto this. Short of what I've just seen tonight on these slides, I have no knowledge whatsoever of this subdivision. My concerns primarily is a ditch that runs directly behind our homes. I really thought a few more of my neighbors would be here. As far as I'm aware, there's no storm sewer in our neighborhood. I've looked into it in the past, where typically you would have a storm sewer, 8 feet down roughly. There isn't one. My property now drains into that ditch at the back of my house, which would be onto that part one, onto Ott Road. That's required, otherwise we'll be flooding our basements. My neighbors now have problems flooding basements. I had them in the past. I have a concern about the drainage there. I have a concern about another, 100 houses or what have you, and the traffic going through our town with roads that aren't paved properly. Fox Road isn't done properly. House Road isn't paved. It's a mess there. You can't get out. Everybody in that neighborhood is going to be going through the center of Stevensville and then up through town. What are we going to do about the roads? You know, Ott Road was sold off to Zoo several years ago. That would have been a perfect out from there to Welland and everywhere else. Now the only way out of there is Fox Road, unless you go back through Stevensville. It's a mess right now at the intersection of Netherby Road and Stevensville Road every day. At 4 o'clock, it's a traffic jam. Where are these people going to get in and out of there? I'm concerned about that. And the roads that are going to this neighborhood are beat up because of all the development the last 10 years. They've never been fixed from the guy with the castle down the road 20 years ago. Dump trucks consistently going up and down those roads. I'd like them fixed. I'd like the drainage fixed, and I'd like the sewers fixed as well. You're putting in another 50 or 100 homes in a place that just had a 50 or 100 homes put in the last 5 years. That's my concerns. I'd like them addressed. And like the last gentleman said, I'm used to having no rear neighbors for almost 20 years. My neighbors have been there 30 years with no rear neighbors. And now this gentleman is talking about putting the houses even higher so they look into our backyard even more. I've enjoyed that privacy. It's one of the reasons I bought my home. It's one of the reasons my neighbors bought their homes. Every house on that side of that street is a single level or perhaps a raised ranch except for one, which is a double level house. The rest are single level homes. If I'm not mistaken, they're talking about building these homes 2.5 stories high, looking into my backyard. So yes, I do have concerns about that as well. I don't know whether they fall upon deaf ears or not, but you know, that neighborhood's been there a long time. My house is the oldest one on that street from 1960. And now it just seems like every spare little lot they're throwing another house on. If you go into the present development going on now, there's empty lots that haven't been developed. If you cross Stevensville Road into what I believe is called Hill Estates, there's lots in there that still have yet to be developed, with posts sticking out of the ground and wires and everything else. That's been 15 years. Those homes haven't been developed yet. Why can't we finish what we have before we start doing this? Like, when is this supposed to be starting? That's my question. I don't have this information. I'm sorry, but everything I've seen is just in the last 10 minutes on these slides.
Right. This is information that, in terms of when it would start, that really depends on a number of factors that would be up to the developer. In terms of the issues that you've raised, I know that staff has been making notes, and those were all things that would need to be addressed before this could proceed. In terms of the height that's being requested, the change to the zoning, that's something that council will has also, I mean, we've all heard what you've had to say. I mean, the reality is there's been a plan of subdivision on this parcel of land for probably 25 years or maybe
I'm
at least
aware
25.
Of the sign when I bought my house 20 years ago, yes. Yeah. You almost couldn't see it at the time.
Right.
So I was aware it was there, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so, I mean, you understand that the owner of the property has some ability to do certain things on the property depending
Absolutely,
on compliance.
Absolutely, sure I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but the comments that you've made, I think, are certainly have influenced when I make my decision, and I know that staff will take those into account. So the process is that staff makes this presentation. We hear from the public this evening. Then staff takes into account those things and comes back with a report to council as to what their recommendations are to us relative to the things that are being requested.
Okay.
And it takes into account, or should take into account, the concerns that you've raised in terms of drainage, in terms of traffic flow, in terms of height.
Some of that may have been addressed already, I don't know, but drainage is a huge thing for me.
Right.
I know my house originally had two or three lots on, or one or two lots on either side that used to get flooded all the time, and I believe it was Mr. Beam at the time that dug the ditch behind those homes, and apparently it's alleviated most of those problems. My house was, I just spent $10,000, $15,000 in my home 3 or 4 years ago to fix my basement. My neighbor beside me has had problems with basement flooding where sump pumps running literally all day long when it rains heavy. So the drainage I'm very, very concerned with. I know a lot of the rest of it, it's not, anything I say isn't going to change it. But, you know, the privacy, yeah, I knew that built, that was zoned to be built someday. But now this gentleman's asking for these homes to be built higher, the ones that actually back onto the houses that have been there for so long. You know, they build a big fence along that railway. Why can't they do the same thing behind our homes? There's got to be a 15-foot fence beside the railroad.
And those are things that would be taken into account by staff in dealing with the report that they'll be preparing for us, and things that councillors can raise as well.
Thank you.
Now, before you go, Mr. Mullen, are there any other, any councillors have any questions? Thank you very much for your comments, sir.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to address council with respect to this particular public meeting? Yes, please come forward, sir. And could we have your name and address, please?
Don Fretz from 2532 Ott Road. And my only question is, change, will that affect the adjoining lots on Ott Road?
Will it affect the roads that face onto Ott Road?
Yes. The, because the backyards will be adjoined. I'm just asking, will that change affect the lots on Ott Road Part 1?
Shouldn't Ms. I wonder if we could get Mr. Brady, could you comment on that? Or would you prefer to have Ms. Dolch respond to that?
I think I'm capable of responding to that.
Well, it's just that, yeah, that's fair enough. It's just that I know that she's been working on this.
No problem at all. The if you're talking about the dimensions of the homes, the lots on Ott Road, they won't be affected at all. If you're concerned about the drainage, the subdivision will have to take into consideration any drainage that's going into it or any drainage that falls on it as a part of its normal development.
Zoning, then, will not affect the lots on
no.
Hot Road.
No, this only affects the lots that are shown in the colors on the graphic above us.
So it should not affect the assessment.
Well,
correct on that.
Wouldn't affect the assessment unless your property becomes more valuable or becomes less valuable, then it could alter. But it's not going to change what can be done on your property or what you can do with the property.
I understand you're right. It could affect the assessment.
Could if, sure, because all the properties in Ontario are assessed every other year. And so that could have an impact on the assessment. I don't know what the impact of this would be on your property, if any. Thank you. Is there anyone else that wishes to speak to council with respect to this particular matter? If there are none, then I will call this public meeting closed, and we'll move then to the third public meeting, and this relates to a property rezoning, again by Park Lane Homes, with respect to property on Washington Road. You are the new employee for the town?
Yeah, Ms. Landry.
You're the draft from the region.
That's me.
Well, it's a temporary trade. We sent Matt Kernahan and we picked up, I'm sorry, your name again?
Denise Landry.
Denise Landry?
Yes.
Yes. So you're going to present this the background for this particular application?
I am.
Great. Please proceed.
Thank you, Your Worship. The zoning bylaw amendment application has been received for the property located on the southeast side of Washington Road, north of Dominion Road and west of Helena Street, with the municipal address 416 Washington Road. The applicant requests permission to construct 3 semi-detached buildings, 6 dwellings, with site-specific provisions. Notification of the March 7, 2016 public meeting was provided in accordance with the requirements of the Planning Act by placing a notice in the February 11, 2016 edition of the Fort Erie Times newspaper. In addition, property owners within 120 meters were mailed a notice of complete application and public meeting on February 9, 2016. This is an aerial photograph of the subject property as well as the surrounding area. The subject lands are located in the Lakeshore neighborhood. The subject property is located on the southeast side of Washington Road, between Helena Street to the east and Dominion Road to the south. The surrounding land uses consist of the following: Washington Road and vacant land to the north, single detached dwellings and Dominion Road to the south, single detached dwellings and Helena Street to the east, single detached dwellings and Washington Road to the west. Official plan designates the subject lands as urban residential, and the proposed semi-detached dwellings are permitted. This slide shows the natural heritage features on and in the vicinity of the subject property as identified in the town's official plan. The subject property, as illustrated, is within a potential natural heritage corridor. Given that the subject property is within a highly developed residential neighborhood, the property does not currently contribute in any way as a natural heritage corridor. Property is currently zoned residential 2, R2 zone, and does not permit semi-detached dwellings. The application proposes to change the zoning of the property to a site-specific residential 3, R3 zone. This is the site plan for the subject property. The plan was revised to accommodate the road widening of 2.435 meters as per the town's official plan and to provide for more amenity space in the rear of the dwellings. As a result of the road widening and to provide for more amenity space in the rear, the minimum lot area has been reduced from 226 square meters to 208 square meters. The minimum front yard has been reduced from 6.05 meters to 6 meters to the garage and 5.24 meters to the dwelling. The minimum rear yard has increased from 4.13 meters to 5.13 meters, and the maximum lot coverage has decreased from 51% to 50%. Through bylaw 8-2016, changes were made to the regulations in the residential 3 R3 zone, as Kira mentioned in her previous presentation. As a result of these changes, the proposed zoning amendment now meets the maximum lot coverage for the one-story semi-detached dwellings and the minimum front yard setback. Therefore, the following zoning changes are requested. Maximum lot coverage of 50% for the two-story dwellings, minimum unit frontage of 7.62 meters, minimum lot area of 208 square meters, minimum rear yard of 5.13 meters. This is the view of the subject property looking southeast from Washington Road. This is a view of the existing dwelling on the subject property looking southeast from Washington Road. This is a view of the vacant land on the northwest side of Washington Road across from the subject property. That concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Landry. And again, just for clarification, on page 3 of the report, there's a listing, there's a table, and it shows as of right and then proposed for 5 regulations. And some of those, it appears, are accommodated by the changes that we made in the R3 zoning, but I'm not clear on that. So as an example, when it says as of right, what is that referring to?
As of right is referring to the zoning bylaw prior to bylaw 8-2016 being approved. We received this application prior to council seeing that bylaw and adopting it.
Okay.
So those are as of right.
Without wanting to put you on the spot.
That's okay.
What would the minimum lot frontage be for the current R3?
I do not have that on me.
Okay, so that would be information that I would be interested in, and maybe other councillors, to see how R3 relates to what's being proposed, whether it's significant or insignificant. So if we could, if council could get that, and maybe between now and when we get to the report, staff might be able to provide that information. Do any members of council have any questions of Ms. Landry? Thank you very much. You did a very good job if this is the first time you've done this. We'll let see now. Ms. Dolch can let you do more, and then she'll get to go. Ms. Dolch can get to go home early. Okay. So at this stage of the game, I don't know if there's someone here for the proponent, I see that Jennifer Menge is here. And just for the record, your last name is spelled M-E-N-G-E. There's no S on the end. That would be the Spanish spelling. Did you want to speak to this at all? If you don't have to, we know that you're here in case we have any questions.
Signs or anything like that?
Right. Do any members of council have any questions with respect to that? That was very easy for you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to address council with respect to this property rezoning? Mr. Poole.
Good evening, everybody.
Still 3811 Rebstock?
Pardon?
Still 3811 Rebstock?
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, like I say, I'm reading over here, it says they want to change lot area coverage, front yard, side yard. I got a question. I don't understand this. When these people asked for this before, it was decided from the other council. They're going to have 6 meters back, 3 meters side. It was all decided. These sub things have been sitting there for years. How some they're saying it's been sold to a different company, and that's why they're allowed to go by the new rules?
No, what's happening here, Mr. Poole, if you wanted an answer to that, is that there are some lots here that were zoned for residential single-family dwellings. What's being proposed now are some semi-detached dwellings, so there would need to be a rezoning. The rezoning application was made prior to council's recent changes to the R3 zone, which relate to the semi-detached. So some of the things that are being requested have already been accommodated by our previous changes. but there are some other things, some other further refinements that are being requested, and we don't have specifically that information before us. But your point is, we understand your point.
And the point is that you guys did make bylaw changes, but they're asking for more.
That would be the point.
I don't understand it. And so,
well, anybody can ask.
I know what you say. They're asking. You haven't given it to them yet. I understand that. That's your job up there to make a decision whether or not to let this keep going on and say, well, you guys went and made a decision, changed the bylaws. I didn't know, but it doesn't matter. That's what they are. We all live with. And my other question is somebody has already got a subdivision already done, ready to go. Can he come and ask for, hey, can I jump on the bandwagon too and make changes before I put the shovel in the ground? Is that allowed now?
Anybody can make an application if they follow the procedure, and then it's up to the council to determine whether or not to make the changes. So your hypothetical answer would be, theoretically, yes. Someone could make an application to further.
So you say, I had to have 3 meters, now you guys are saying 1.5 meters. Before I put the shovel in the ground, now we don't have to go in front of the OB or nothing.
No. If they're going to ask for a rezoning, then that's subject to appeal to the OMB.
Okay, rezoning, but I'm talking about a subdivision that's been rezoned already.
No, if they wanted to make a change to the zoning of the lots within the subdivision, that's a rezoning application. If they want to modify the setbacks and what have you, they'd have to apply for a site-specific rezoning. And that would permit anyone who doesn't agree with the decision, whether it's the developer or a resident, to appeal to the OMB.
Do you understand what I'm saying? Say that it was 6, now you're saying 4 or 3, whatever it is. And the question is that he's within the law, within the rules. So why did he just come to get his building permit? He hasn't got the building permit yet. So he gets the building permit and says, okay, I was going to have my house back 6 meters. Now I can have 4 meters. And he would be allowed to, right?
That's the property rezoning. So it's no different than the previous public meeting where an existing plan of subdivision is already on the books.
So it can't go forward unless it goes in front of you and neighbors can get to see
it. Want to make changes, you have to make an application to amend the zoning bylaw. And when council ultimately makes a decision, that's a decision that's subject to appeal to the Ontario Municipal Board.
Okay, I just want to make sure it doesn't, go in and say that's what the rules are and you just go ahead and do it. But it has to go in front of you again. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Poole. Is there anyone else who wishes to address council with respect to this? If not, then I'm going to declare this public meeting closed. And that's going to take us to the consent agenda. We do need report CDS 24216 removed. And I'd also like to have report CDS 21-2016, which relates to the existing draft plan, the zoning application for the phase 3 of Village Creek. Is there anyone else that wishes to remove any items from the consent agenda package? Then could I have a motion to move the consent agenda package as, well, except for CDS 21 and 24. Anko, I saw first, although I was looking at that bright green shirt. any questions with respect to the items that are contained in the package? Councillor Lewis, did you have any questions with respect? No, your questions are directed at 21. So could I, Mr. Brady, I wonder if I could ask a couple of questions with respect to CDS 19, well, actually one. And there was an issue raised with respect to the setbacks. And how would that look in terms of snow clearance, in terms of what the streetscape will look like between the building and the other side of the road?
In answer to your question, if you walk along Erie Road through the commercial core of Crystal Beach, the vast majority of the properties are up to the front, there are some residential properties that aren't, but when they convert, we would anticipate that they would change to a commercial property and also would be that type of front face. That was looked at as part of the Bay Beach Master Plan, and it was suggested that that kind of front face we want to encourage, and this is the way to do so. So what will happen is if the snow is plowed, the snow is plowed up onto the road allowance, and if it flows into the sidewalk that's there, then the sidewalk will have to be, the snow will have to be removed from it to make it effective.
So in terms of that streetscape, I recall seeing some conceptual drawings of what the streetscape might look like, and I've got in my head, and maybe it was a different report or different pictures, but I had in my head that there was some type of decorative lighting or perhaps shrubs. Did you recall that?
Yes, I do. There were certainly there was identified that there'd be street trees from this area down, extending into Crystal Beach. There are sidewalks on the one side of Erie Road right now, but it's also identified that there would be sidewalks on both sides of Erie Road, and that would allow for the parking in the new parking lots to have parking in front of them. And there's also some landscaping going in front of those parking lots as part of the site plan process. There was some decorative lighting identified schematically in the plans, and there will certainly be some lighting provided as a part of the detail review, which is out for tender. It's also further along in this report where the detailed work will be done, in this agenda.
Okay. And then if I could ask you with respect to report CDS 20, which is the relative to the public meeting that we just concluded, I don't know whether you would have the R3 zoning information there. If not, if you could provide that to us, that would be helpful so that we can see how current R3 relates to the proposed.
It would appear that our protege from the region has found it and would like to provide it to council.
Yes. Could you please come forward then, Ms. Landry?
Thank you. The minimum unit frontage is 9.5 meters, which you see on the page 3. So there's no difference there. That's the as of right. The minimum lot area is the same as 305. The minimum front yard is still 6 meters. The minimum rear yard as well is 7.5 meters.
Ms. Landry, if you could put up the actual schematic.
So it looks like what is referred to as of right in the table on page 3 is actually what the current R3 zoning provides. And proposed
Correct.
Is what's being requested.
Yes, what you see in the blue box is...
Right, and so some of these are... Okay, thank you. I don't know if anyone has, Councillor Lubberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Just, we're receiving these reports tonight for information, and obviously we're going to get some more detailed in the future, but I think it gets really confusing here when we're talking about the plan of subdivision or the plans on certain things were the application was made before the bylaw was changed. And so all these numbers are being thrown at us and all these changes are being thrown at us, but this doesn't apply because we changed the bylaw now. for us, I don't know about the other counselors, but for me to sit here and try to get that and catalog that, I'm having a difficult time with that. I would like to see that it be separated in the report coming forward. This is what they applied for, which no longer applies because the change is made. This is what they're this is what they actually want to change. Instead of coming, you know, zigzagging back and forth and cross-referencing different bylaws, I would much prefer that it's very simple. It's 7.62 meters and it should be this, or it's 3.5 and they want one. That makes it very, very easy to understand for everybody, even people in the public, so that they get the idea that here's the change that you're asking. And I don't know that there's much change here in this report, but on the other ones, we can see that there's multiple changes. And is that possible to bring that forward in our report that's going to be coming?
Of course it is. And this report actually does provide exactly what you're asking for with that table. So, Ms. Landry, you're to be commended for that. And I know that the other one was a little complicated, but there's no reason why we couldn't have a table of this nature in each report going forward. Sure, please.
Normally we would do that. The difference that occurred is that the bylaw, after a report was written, the bylaw's final pass now, so we had to take that into consideration tonight, because at the public meeting you need to make sure all the amendments asked for are provided to the public. So some things changed, so we had to notify you through the public meeting process. Normally we would do so through the charts in our report.
Right.
So I apologize for the confusion, but we did need to make it known what changes occurred to our bylaw.
That's fine. I think it would be, I think a table, even if it was part of a memo to council afterwards saying, just to refine what's being asked for and what's been already approved, because that would be helpful.
Yes, and keep them separate. Like, this is over here, and now, today, this is what we have to actually deal with.
Anything further, Councillor Lubberts? Any other councillors? Then if I might, Mr. Brady, with respect to report CDS 23, this relates to the contract for consulting services. Did we have a budget going into this? It seemed to be that the report suggested that there was, and it was around what the price was, but I'm not clear on that.
Yes, we had a budget going into this, and the documentation that we have is within that budget.
Thank you. And then just one other question with respect to that, and that is, have we received a permit yet from the MNR? Is that a work in progress?
I believe what you're referring to is the toad permit.
Well, it's the permit to allow us to do some excavating.
The only permit that we need from the Ministry of Natural Resources is a toad permit. There was a toad permit on the site. There was some confusion as to whether or not we could move forward with a toad permit with one in place. We've ratified that by having the old one removed, so it's no longer in existence, and we're in the process of applying for a new one.
That's a work in progress. Thank you. Any other questions by any members of council? If not, then I'm going to call the question with respect to the items that remain in the consent agenda package. All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. Could I have someone move report CDS 21? Councillor Lubberts? Questions? Councillor Lubberts?
Yes, thank you very much. I guess now we move into the questions about these setbacks. And we brought forward a bylaw to change the setbacks. The reason that we had the setbacks changed is because we kept getting these requests for amendments to the bylaw so that we could change the setbacks for this person, and this person wanted a different setback, and someone wanted to change the side yard setback or the front yard whichever way it was. So the decision was made to have a bylaw that gives the developers, these are the setbacks for the town of Fort Erie, and when you come in and you build your plan of subdivision or you do any building, these are the parameters that you have to work with. And here we are again asking for changes. And we're putting ourselves right back in the same position where we were before, whereas once you allow it, you can't stop it, because now someone can appeal that to the OMB because you allowed someone else to do it. You set the precedence now. So when I look at the application and I look at the applicant, it seems that we have dealt with this developer before and provided that developer with setback changes. I'm not in favor of giving the setback changes when we've just made a bylaw that's going to set the setbacks. And I would ask the developer, why can't the developer take the bylaw that we have with all the setbacks and say, okay, I'm going to build something within that, and let's see how that works, because I don't think that there's a whole lot different. It may be one unit that could be interrupted here, and it makes life a lot easier for everybody. We have people that are concerned in neighborhoods. You want to raise your heights. We changed that bylaw so that we were going to have certain heights. And I don't know that I will support this report and support the changes that they want to make. I'd like to know if the developer is willing to build something within the specifications that the town of Fort Erie has provided.
Well, I think the answer to that is no, or he wouldn't have made the application. So he wants modifications.
Well, when is the developer going to decide that, well, this is what we have in the town of Fort Erie? I mean, why are we making these bylaws and why are we setting these setbacks? If we're going to, I mean, the developer came and asked staff, this is what we're asking. We're making application for this. And staff says, well, yeah, we bring it to council, probably not a problem. Or they could say, no, I don't think this is going to happen. Right? But, I mean, somewhere along the line, everybody needs to be on the same page and everybody needs to be backing everybody else up and saying, these are the rules that we have and this is the way we think that building should go on in this town. I don't agree with guys coming along and saying, well, we just want to make a little minor setback here, change the setback so that we can add a unit or maybe add two units. And we have the bylaw, and I think we stay with the bylaw and let the developer come back and bring us something that complies with the rules and regulations that we have.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that wishes to speak to this? Councillor Nutt and then Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Your Worship. Just some comments on this. For the plan, the issue that I have are with the three Part 1 outer pieces that face Ott Road and West Main. See, the difference is the developer had plenty of room on Old Mill that backs on the Coral. So the houses there are very similar. What he's proposing in these three outer pieces are vastly different to the existing neighborhood, and I'm not comfortable allowing that development in there. I don't care about the inner portion because it's all going to be built similar and facing similar, just like what he did on Lower Coach Road. I think that would be acceptable, but to create a part on the three outer pieces where it's Part 1, Part 1, Part 1, change that to Part 4 and have him match the outer existing portion similar to what he did along Old Mill Road facing Coral, because those houses are similar. I think that staying within the outer-facing existing confines, I think, would better suit the neighborhood. And I feel strongly that the drainage in that area definitely needs to be looked at in a second set of eyes. So I don't know if Mr. Walsh or Mr. Brady would comment on that, but I haven't seen the drainage plan.
Well, that's an issue that's going to have to be taken into account, I presume, Mr. Brady.
It will be taken into account.
Thank you.
Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Mayor DeCup. I concur with my colleague, Councilor Knott. I have no issues if we want to pack them in like sardines in the interior. You know what you're getting at the time when you're buying it, and that can be a free-for-all as far as that goes. But I'll be waiting my comments when the time comes to deliberate more on the exterior-facing properties, because I do think we have an obligation to ensure that they do fit in more with the neighborhood than what is currently planned. I'll be supporting the report tonight. I think it's ridiculous not to support a report. It's for information purposes, and I know that staff and the developer have been paying attention, and I look forward to a further compromise when it comes back before us for a final decision. Thank you, Mayor Riddick.
Thank you, Councilor Passero. Councilor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. I agree with Councilor Passero that this report is for information purposes, but I also agree with my colleagues, Councillor Lubertz and Councillor Knott, for both their points. I have a problem with a 2.5-story building that not literally encroaches, but has a bit of a disrespect to the existing owners that are there at this point in time. I mean, I certainly wouldn't want someone peering over in my backyard either and having to decide whether or not I should get permission to build a higher fence so that I can have or maintain some semblance of privacy. That would be my real main issue with the whole concept at any rate.
Thank you. And I do think it's helpful for staff to at least hear some of the comments that counselors make. Certainly, this is a matter that should proceed at least to the next report. Councillor Lubertz, you had, before I go there, I just wanted to ask staff if we could also have, aside from in the report, the proposed lot makeup of the revised Phase 3, could we also get a copy for comparison purposes of what exists in Phase 1 and presumably Phase 2, so that we know what the flow is between those two subdivisions. Councillor Lubertz.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. I just want to comment on whether you're supporting or not supporting a report that's brought forward to us for information. And if you look at the second bat of this recommendation is that the staff to present a report on the revised draft plan of subdivision on the revised. So if we agree with everything in this information package, then staff is going to be directed to bring back a report with all the changes. And that's why we at this time say, well, we don't really agree with these changes. Now's the time not to agree, because staff has to bring back a report that's going to say, well, we're not going to allow the 2.5 stories, or we're not going to allow this setback, or we're not going to allow that, or you're going to have to do something else other with your drainage problems. And now's the time to do that, I would think.
I agree. I think you're quite right. I think it's helpful for staff to have some indication of which direction council may be going. I mean, they can't, I don't think, read our minds, so they can listen to what we have to say. But on the other hand, this is a report for information purposes, and they're going to provide us with a report relative to the proposed changes based on what they've heard from the public and what they've heard from us and from the proponent. So you're quite right. It's helpful for staff to know what we're thinking.
Well, I just want to make it clear to everybody that now's the time to make your comments about whether you support the changes or not. Now's the time to do it, not when the report comes forward, because the report coming forward is with all of your support or non-support of the project.
Right.
And that's where I'm coming with the, you know, they did well with the other subdivision. We constantly were seeing changes to setbacks, so we changed the bylaw to say these are it, and now you come back and you want to change it. I say no, and let's work within the bylaw that we have, It makes it much more simpler. And so I would ask staff to come back and with a report with no setback changes.
Well, you could certainly ask that, Councilor Liberts. Any other questions?
Then I guess I'm asking for it.
And I'm sure that staff has heard it. Yeah. Councilor Zanko.
Thank you, Redekop. Just actually a question through you to Mr. Brady. What is the current height requirements? Two-story?
Mr. Brady? Or two-story or one-story?
I believe it's two-story. Yeah, currently it's two-story, and they're looking along that one flank for a two-and-a-half-story.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions or comments? Mr. Brady, I'm sure that you've heard comments from council, and I'm sure Ms. Dolch. I'll call the question then with respect to the recommendations in Report CDS 21. All those in favor? Opposed? That is carried. That takes us to CDS 24, 2016. Can I have a mover for that? Councillor Nutt. Any questions or comments with respect to this? This is the one that Councillor Butler has the pecuniary interest in. If there are none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? And opposed, that is carried. And that completes the consent agenda, and I'd like to take a 10-minute recess if we could, and then when we come back, Councillor Butler, you'll be taking the chair.
Yes, I was just wondering if Councillor Nutt could take the chair for me in the beginning so that I could speak to one of the issues.
Yeah, for sure. Well, yes. You can do the presentation and delegation list because you can ask questions of the delegate, but then if you wanted to you wanted to have that report chaired by Councillor?
Yes.
Yeah, that'd be fine. We'll do that.
Okay, great.
Okay, so we'll come back at 7:51. I'd like to call this meeting back to order, and I will hand the chair over to Councillor Butler for Planning and Development Services.
Thank you, Your Worship. Planning and Development Services is now open. We have a presentation and delegation this evening with Mr. Sam Bashta of Brody's Drugstore regarding the request for support of grant funding for renovation. Could you please say your name and give your address for record, please?
Sure. Sam Bashta, 3404 Hideaway Place, Mississauga. And I'm here to ask for the support for the recommendation made by the Evaluation Committee regarding the funds that we did the renovation exactly. If you have any questions, we started by having the permit, and I was told about the project for the program for the fund for the, and when we started basically doing this job, I really enjoyed being in the town, a small town. Town is great, but the joint effort between the business and the town, and that's what makes the town very unique and different. And when we did the renovation, we definitely looked at how much it's going to cost, but basically it's not only the cost. I want to make it unique and different. So we looked at how we're going to improve not only the look, the integrity of the building and the history, as well as the safety, plus the efficiency as well. So maybe you know that we have some situations where we have some break-ins and some good, I don't want to say, but again, it's part of our business. Like, if we're more than a bank anyway, for the, so basically we took care of all these things, we had lots of planning, and to execute all these plans took us a while. Maybe there is a part of it is that's why we're kind of late on what we had to I applied for the application and the program as well. I usually say I when I do something, I like to do it with passion. I don't want to talk about myself, but I like to talk more about the town and the people. I won't be able to do anything about what I've done without the help of the people as well. And that's all. That's everything. I'm not sure exactly. And I wish we can approve one of the options here. I have option one, two, or three. We'll talk about option two somewhere in the middle. So.
Thank you, Mr. Bashta. Can you just remain at the podium in case one of my colleagues has any questions or comments with respect to what you just presented? I just have a couple of questions for you myself, though, but I would like to just have you tell us that the reason that your particular project couldn't go ahead with the request for the funding was because you had already had your contractors lined up and the opportunity to wait for the approval process didn't allow itself because your contractors were lined up, and if you were to release them to wait for that moment, it would cost you a pretty penny as a direct result and delays in the project, correct?
Correct. There are two factors actually related on renovation in Canada. Basically, weather is one of them as well. So we had all the contractor booked. That's number one. Number two is the weather. It has to be done at the right exact time. And I was worried about that one. We don't know how it's going to look like in the summertime. Is it going to be short, nice, good summer or no? So we had to start on our schedule. And actually, at the same time, I was trying to finish our paperwork to get that program done.
Great. So it wasn't a lack of trying to get that program.
Absolutely
it was
not.
Just a matter of timing between the building permits and the capability of being able to perform. So yours is just a unique situation that got.
I just want to say sorry. Actually, I wasn't trying to ignore anyone actually, I'm trying to get the job done as simple as this, and I want to do it in a schedule as well because every day costs money.
Okay, thank you. Do any of my fellow councils have any questions? Mayor Redekop and then Councillor Casiro.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Bashta, and I want to commend you on the attractiveness of the building that you've renovated. I don't know if you had an opportunity to review the report that's before us this evening. It was prepared by staff. It makes reference to the three options.
I had a look to the C options here, yeah.
Okay, so you're familiar then with what's being suggested in option two?
Yes.
Do you understand that our predicament is that we can't commit the region to fund this because the region is entitled to consider it and approve it on its own?
I fully understand that part.
Okay, so do you have any difficulty with us if we were to go forward with option two? If that were the recommendation, do you have any problem with that?
No, I definitely love option one, but it's okay. The option two looks good to me as well.
You want the one that's most advantageous to you, but in terms of us trying to make sure that we protect the municipality,
absolutely,
vis-a-vis the program, you understand why option two is recommended.
Yeah, absolutely. I understand that very well.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. During the 10-minute break, Mayor Redekop was looking at my notes, so that was my question, actually.
Oh, yes.
But,
that's what happens when you turn your back.
But thank you, Mr. Bashta, for your investment in our community, and I'll be supporting option two tonight. I can't speak for my other colleagues, but I can't put out the money on behalf of the region and hope to get it back, but I will support our municipal contribution, and thank you for your investment.
I am sorry about my personality. I just want to do it now. If I can do it yesterday, that's the problem I have. That's how they're saying I'm looking for more projects. No problem with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, thank you. Okay, we're just going to... go on to reports. CDS-08-2016 short-term house rentals licensing report. Can I have a mover for that? Councillor McDermott. And Councillor McDermott, you'd like to speak to that?
Yes, Madam Chair. I would like to defer this until the April 4th meeting. I have got a hold of the residents from that area that are concerned with the short-term house rentals, and they tell me they will be here on April 4th. So if we could defer that, I would appreciate that.
Thank you, Councillor McDermott. That motion is to defer is on the table for report number CDS-08-2016. I'll call the question. All those in favor? That motion is carried. On to report number CDS 26 2016 Douglastown Black Creek Secondary Plan being the proposed official plan amendment number 28, OPA 28, and related proposed zoning bylaw changes to implement OPA 28 recommendation report. Can I have a mover? Councillor Zanko? That report is now on the floor. Do any councillors have any comments or questions? Worship?
Yeah, I just have a comment. I thought this was a very well-written report. It's I know this has been a long process. There have been a lot of inquiries that were made, and I thought that Mr. Miller did an excellent job on this report, and I think it's going to serve the community well. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Worship. Any other comments or questions? Councillor Nutt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through you to Mr. Miller, I just wanted to commend him as well on his work. I know he had a long, a lot of meetings, a long list of considerations to take into effect. And after reading the report, I agree with the mayor that it will suit the community and does fit our mandates and places to grow. So thank you for your hard work.
Thank you, Councillor. Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? Motion carried. Next report is CDS-27-2016, proposed zoning bylaw amendment. Eni Corporation, Valerie Beatty, president, owners, Harold Hyde, agent, south side of Lakeshore Road, east of Albert Street. McDermott. That report is on the floor. Any comments or questions? Your Worship.
I had a question with respect to Appendix 3, and I'm wondering if we can just get an explanation as to what it actually means.
Mr. Brady?
Just one moment.
This is the one with the boundary lines and then some green and some arrows, and I thought I understood it, but then I'm not sure that I do.
Certainly. Appendix 3 is an illustration of the proposed zoning setbacks. I think it would be fair to say that this is not a normal lot in the mainstream of the town of Fort Erie. So what we have done is the lot itself that's being created is identified in red. There's a red edge to the lot. And we have put in a very site-specific zoning standards. So the front yard setback on this lot is 10 meters, and you can see that. The side yard setback to the west is 2 meters. The side yard setback to the east is proposed to be 15 meters. And then we take 2 points, and we have a 3-meter setback from the shore wall to an orange area, and a 38 meters setback from the shore wall to a point, and that creates a building envelope. So there's a building envelope on this site which is identified in orange, and any building on this property in terms of the main structure must be within that area. It's a large building envelope, so a large building can go on the property. But what this has done is it's moved the building to be located to the east, to the west. Therefore, it provides for sight lines for the house across the street, and it also provides for sight lines for what is Ina's own property to the west, but at some point in time, it may well not be their property, so we take them into consideration as well. So we've tried to deal with sight lines as much as we can. The last thing that's shown on this property is green, and that is being used to identify an easement which will go across the front of the property and down the side to what is an outlet. The outlet is on the town's property, but that easement will have a requirement on it that there can be no building or fence on that property.
And then if I might, there are also two green lines, one going through the building envelope and one going through a portion of the house running from Lakeshore Road south. What are they?
The two parallel lines that run from the road, one through the house, one through where the proposed house will be, that is the road allowance.
I wasn't aware the size of the encroachment was that significant. Then over on the east side, the line that runs from the road down to the beach and has a bit of an angle at the bottom on the south side. What's that?
I'm not sure which one you're referring to, Mr. Mayor.
The line that goes from Lakeshore Road south on the east side of the property, or the right-hand side of the diagram where the easement would touch.
That was an original lot line that had been proposed, and it's been identified over.
I see. Okay, that's fine. That's very helpful, and I certainly agree that the shoreline protection that's already in place is more than adequate to protect that property. So I'll be supporting this. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Worship. Any other comments or questions? Councillor Lubritz?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm looking at the building envelope, and I'm seeing here that what you're saying, I guess my question is to Mr. Brady. Is that what's proposed to build a 6,000 square foot home, 6,100 square foot home?
Mr. Brady?
Through to Councillor Lubritz. What the building envelope does is it provides the outer dimensions of any home that could be put on the property. It doesn't mean that it will be a 6,100 square foot home, but it does mean that it's potentially possible for it to have a maximum of a 6,100 square foot home on one floor. The site provides for, the zoning provides for two stories. So therefore, it is conceivable based on the zoning that's being provided for on this property that the maximum house size could be just upwards of 12,000 square feet, a large home.
All right. Yeah, thank you very much. Looking at the setback that's on the, what would that be, the west side, the 2 meters, what would the normal setback be for a two-story?
I believe the normal setback for...
That would be a side yard setback, right?
Side yard setback is... Where is it? 3 meters?
3 meters?
I believe that's what it is.
Why is it that we can't put it 3 meters and then have our building envelope less 1 meter on that side? So now what would 1 meter, how much square footage would you take away from your building envelope if you had the actual setback that's supposed to be?
You'll note that setback at that corner is 2 meters and that the building envelope varies away from it to a point, which is what we've identified, which is 38 meters. So while it's 2 meters at the front, it's growing as it moves to the back. And I would estimate, based on diagram in front of us, that we're looking at something in the neighborhood of 6 meters at the back corner.
Yes, I see that. But my question is, how much square footage would you lose on your building envelope if that 2 meters was 1 meter? Or 3 meters, rather.
Don't know off the top of my head. I could make a guess. 15, 20, about 25 times one. Yeah, about 150 square feet. Something in that range.
And is that not acceptable to the applicant to lose 150 square feet? I mean, we've done a lot for this applicant. We gave them a road allowance for a piece of property that's partly under the water so that they could build a home on this lot. And now they come back and they're saying, well, I want to build this house, but I don't have enough room. So now I want you to make a zoning bylaw amendment so that I can put it 2 meters from the side in the one corner instead of 3 meters. You know, to me, it seems like the applicant's starting to take advantage of the situation, and it seems that maybe the applicant feels that they're just going to get whatever they want. And 150 square feet, to lose 150 square feet on a 6,000 square foot home, I don't know that that's a lot to lose. And, but you're certainly asking for a lot from the municipality. I mean, we have a bylaw in place, and this goes right back to our public meetings that we had earlier. Bylaws in place, 3-meter setback.
Like Mr. Brady to respond to that?
Yes.
Brady?
Ms. Dolch has pointed out to me a correction, which she often does, and she should continue to do so. The standard that would be applied to this site would have a 1.5 meter for a one story and a 2 meter for anything one story or above. So the 2 meter setback that's been identified on this site is what the waterfront residential standard has as its setback. So it meets that in terms of that setback, and it greatly exceeds it on the eastern flank, where we've identified a 15-meter setback. According to our standards, that should also be 2 meters.
So the 2 meters is within our bylaw now? Is that what Ms. Dolch is telling us?
The waterfront residential zone, which is what this will be zoned if this is approved, calls for 2 meters for anything above a one-story dwelling.
Okay, thank you. And the front is 10 meters. That falls within the waterfront guidelines as well?
The frontage that we've identified on this property of 10 meters is greater than what is within the waterfront residential zone. The waterfront residential zone has it at 7.5 meters. We've moved it back because it fits more accordingly with the way that the homes are along the section of the road.
So basically then what we're asking for is the zoning amendment would be the 3 meters from the shore wall from the 1 in 100 year flood line. Is that correct?
The zoning bylaw amendment for this property is to zone the property waterfront residential with these specific setbacks to it, which then creates the envelope. So there's two aspects to this. One is that we're actually zoning the property waterfront residential, and the other aspect is we're providing this regulatory framework for it.
Yes, thank you very much. Well, I don't have a problem rezoning it waterfront residential because basically that's what it is. There's a home there now, and it's on the waterfront, so I don't have a problem with that. If the 2 meters is within the new bylaw that we have now, and the 10 meters, obviously the 38 meters is, because that's 30 meters, should be 30. So it's the 3 meters and the waterfront designation. I guess that's what we're being asked for. And the shore wall, we've got reports from NPCA that the shore wall is more than sufficient to take any wave uprush. Just the one question that I have is for in regards to the NPCA. And the Environmental Advisory Committee is, I believe, our next meeting, if not one after that, the NPCA is going to be making some presentation to the group. And one of the questions that was brought up to them by the committee was, with the changes in global warming and stuff and the melting of the glaciers and stuff, water heights are going to change over time. And our question was, is the 1 in 100 year flood line going to be affected? Did the NPCA give any mention of that with this year application?
Mr. Brady.
Through to Councilor Lubert. We certainly discussed all matters with the NPCA as part of this application. I don't remember anything specific to that. However, I suggest to you that when it comes to the waterfront in this area, the Niagara River is probably the most critical in terms of the standards.
Madam Chair, specifically referred to on page, in a letter from the Conservation Authority at page 18 of this package report.
Yes, I know, but I'm just wondering if they took into consideration the future of the 1 in 100 year flood line. Is there going to be changes in our boundaries in the town of Fort Erie? Are they going to move them up?
I've heard of nothing that they're considering changes in terms of lakefronts. The only word I've heard is that there may be some changes in terms of some of the rivers.
Okay, thank you very much. So just for some clarification, if I were asked by a resident what changes we made to this year application, it's basically the only thing we changed was we allowed the 3-meter setback, but the shore wall compensates for it, and we're in good shape with that. I don't have a problem with that. And we designated waterfront residential to the property. That's the only thing that we're doing here this evening.
There are two other things that you're doing here this evening, and that is you're creating a 15-meter setback for the eastern flank, which is greatly more than what is the standard, and you're increasing the front yard from 7.5 to 10.
Yeah, but the building envelope is providing more setback than what's required, so.
That's correct.
So actually they could, if it wasn't for the seawall or the 1 in 100 year flood line being so close at the 3-meter point, they could build the house bigger on that side and
Mr. Brady.
Be within the bylaw, setback bylaw.
Through to Councilor Lubert. If Council chooses to approve this zoning this evening, the only area that will be permitted for a house to be built will be the area which is in orange.
Yes, I understand that, yes. But that's not my question.
Can I just... Yes, there's one other change, and the other change is a reduction in the rear yard. It's supposed to be 10 meters. It's been reduced to 3. So that coincides with the 3 meters shore wall. So I'm not exactly sure if that responds to your question, but...
Well, I thought the 3 meter was from the 1 in 100 year flood line.
There are two purposes. One is the 1 in 100 year flood plain, but also the size of the rear yard. It's supposed to be 10 meters. It's only 3 at that particular point. It's 38, I think, over on the other side or whatever the map says.
Mr. Brady, is that correct?
If we, through you to all, the map, which is identified as Appendix 3, identifies that there is a substantial rear yard being provided for. It's 3 meters on the one point, and it's 38 meters on the other point. This is a irregular parcel, so that's why it's being treated in this fashion.
Yes, thank you very much. But what we, Mayor Redekop is saying, we are making an amendment to the zoning bylaw at the 3-meter mark because it should be 10 meters. So that is an amendment that we are making.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? Motion carried. I'd like to turn the chair over to Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So can I have a mover for CDS 28-2016, His Worship? The report, CDS 28-2016, is now on the floor for comments. I read a cop and then I'll go.
Sorry,
down.
No. Go to
okay, Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Chair Nutt. It seems to me that this would be a unique situation, and it's outlined in the report as well. You know, the applicant was at the permit issuance stage when he learned about the facade grant program, and he did do the pre-consultation upon learning about the program. He did meet the program requirements. He just couldn't wait for the application to be processed and the agreement to be signed prior to the work being undertaken. That was because he couldn't delay the project because he would risk losing the contractors, and that would create quite a burden financially on the applicant. So I'm in favor of option number two. I think that's a fair option at this point, pending the approval of the region, whether or not they're going to participate in this. But I think it's a fair move for the town of Fort Erie to support one of our merchants on our downtown area core.
Are you moving that?
Yes,
I'm
moving
two
that.
Right.
Thank
now.
You. Option
okay.
two.
Mayor Redicott?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask a couple of questions of staff, and the first one was, in the context of this application, is there anything that the staff could have done to perhaps facilitate both the forward movement of an application and recognize that the owner was in a bit of a predicament with respect to having lined up workers and what have you? In other words, is there something that we can do in the future so that if we run into a situation where an owner is aware of the fact that there's an application that can be made for financial assistance to a facade program, but has time constraints for whatever reasons?
Mr. Miller, would you like to take that, or Mr. Birdie?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, for your question. It's difficult to say. I mean, the circumstances vary. I think education and promotion of the programs to the BIAs or the you know, communities is our best way to prevent future instances or occurrences in this matter. But it's awareness, really. So if, you know, perhaps we can get back out to the areas that do have the CIPs, you know, put the flyers in the mail, put them in there, make sure that they know about them, and just try and preemptively look at this through education.
Mr.
If I might, Mr. Chair, I don't think that actually addresses my concern, because I believe from what I've heard and been told is that the owner was aware of the program.
He had just become aware when he was at his permit stage.
Yes. And so my question is, when that occurs and it's not feasible for the project to be held up, is there some way that we can make an improvement to the program so that we don't run into this situation where the job is completed and then somebody has to come to council to request our leniency with respect to the program.
I understand what you're saying. Did I think
Mr. Brady?
We move through to the mayor. We move the processes along as quickly as we possibly can. And in all of the other cases, there has been no issue. There is a learning curve with this, both from a staff perspective and from the BIA's perspective. It's 2015 year was a great year in terms of getting these programs up and running, and that's super. But there was also a learning curve on our part in terms of doing that. I can't suggest that it will never happen again, but we'll certainly try to prevent it.
Right, and thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to suggest that there's anything that staff failed to do. I think that staff has done a remarkable job with respect to this program over the years that it's been in operation. And so just, I suppose if it does arise, if the situation does arise again, we've at least had, as everyone is saying, the experience. We've had an opportunity this type of situation once before.
Fair enough. It is a first time instance. Yeah.
Councilor Luberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm a little confused as to how the applicant just became aware of it after the facade had already been improved, or he became aware of it at building permit stage.
Through the chair to Councilor Luberts. At the building permit stage, he became aware. So essentially, he was working in isolation, getting his plans together, yeah, getting his contractors lined up, getting everything in order, and then coming to town to get his permits to start, ready to go. But was unaware there was a program in place that could assist.
Yeah.
And so when he learned that, he did pre-consult immediately. But the decision then was, I have all the contractors here. It's the time of year when I need to move. That kind of thing, a decision had to be made. So he had to make a decision, and his decision was to initiate the project and then try for the funding.
Okay. I'm going to support the option two. I'm going to support that and, you know, try to help this gentleman out. But I guess my question would be to Mr. Brady. Was there anything holding the applicant back at that time, at permit stage, from applying, or did he apply at that time? Is that what the problem is?
Through to Councillor Luberts, the applicant at that point in time could have told his contractors to stand down. He could have filled out the application form, filled out the information that we require as a part of this. Submit that to Mr. Miller. Mr. Miller could have then brought the Ridgeway evaluation team together and decided on whether or not it would be acceptable. But that takes time. And the applicant felt at that point in time that he didn't have the time to do that. He wanted to immediately move ahead with the contractor. So he did. He could have applied. He chose not to. And if he had chosen to apply, then he would have had to wait to get his building permit until the evaluation team had completed their tasks.
Yes, thank you very much. And I think where I'm going with this is just to follow up on what Mayor Redekop was saying earlier, that there's ways that we can improve the program, and there's one of the ways that I see that we might be able to help alleviate some of the problem is, why do we have to tell the contractors to stop and don't do any work? Why can't we just say, well, here's the situation that's unique, fill out the application and continue on with your project and let us do the application. No improvements had been made to the building at this time. By the time building permit stage was there, there had been no improvements made, so he still qualifies to have some grant funding. And I think that might have helped though at the regional level too, but I guess I'm just suggesting that maybe we allow the applicant, if in these situations if they're just becoming aware of it, that these programs are there, at a certain point, continue to fill out the application anyway and just continue working on it, and then this is where we are right now. The gentleman over here has done the improvements, and now he's asking for some grant funding. Why don't we just allow them to fill the application out?
Through the chair to you, Councilor Luberts. Suppose there's some subtleties, and it might be a little gray there, but some people want to build or know whether they're going to have funding in place before they do their improvements, because it may be, you know, highly needed in the sense of that they're operating on a thinner budget. So people, you know, it's felt that people would want to know that they, yes, and sign this agreement. You do the work that you say you're going to do. There'll be money at the end of the day. And that agreement process, like the directors indicated, it takes us a bit of time from the time they apply to the time we sign agreements. And that's the time that our applicant didn't have the time to afford in this instance. But I'm open to trying to, you know, make things in those situations happen, but we felt that we needed to carry the process through from the application time and then through the process and in the application guide. It indicates that you're not just start construction or pull your permits before you know whether you have an approval.
Yeah, yes, I understand that, and I understand the fact that some people want to know that they're going to have the money and the money is going to be in place before they go forward. But think about it, those people would know about the program because they're going to be looking for the money before they get started.
Well, we tried.
This gentleman, he had the money, obviously. He was going forward with the program anyway, and then he learned of this grant funding and said, hey, I'd like to apply. But he couldn't apply unless he told his contractors not to start any work and delay everything. That's where I'm coming from.
Okay.
Just making a suggestion that maybe we can allow them, if that comes about again, just allow them to fill out the application and still go forward with the project.
I'll take that under advisement.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Chair recognizes Councillor McDermott.
Mr. Miller, I just have one question. This project, had it been done from beginning to end, like all the other projects, he would have met all the requirements?
Absolutely. There's no question that the intent of what he was intending to do through the facade improvements, the improvements made. I can't speak for the committee, but the end result is that building is in far better shape today than it was before he started.
Thank you.
Councillor Lubitz, I recognize you, but I'm going to go to Councillor Zenko first because she hasn't spoken yet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through you to Mr. Miller. Mr. Miller, can you just explain the process a little bit? From my understanding, you have an application process in place. So, for example, and I'll just give an example of three contractors have to quote on the work and you follow and maintain that process. And I know Councillor McDermott had just asked if all the requirements had been met. So were you involved with that process as well?
Through the chair to Councillor Zenko, yes. I had been dealing, I'm the point person for the people coming forward, and through his own due diligence at the time of seeking contractors had, obtained multiple estimates for the same work. So he had the estimates for the work that needed to be done, which was a requirement. So certainly, we requested that information and it was received. So.
And if it's okay, Mr. Chair, and with regard to the CIP program in the Ridgeway area, how many applications were received and did it come to a point where you had to deny applicants because of limited funding?
Through the chair to Councillor Zenko, the number I don't have in my head, but I do believe that I think that I've completed six projects in Ridgeway that have been done and paid out in that sense. There are others still in process, I guess you could say, and I do have two applications on my desk for two more at the moment. So in Ridgeway, I'm going to estimate that we're looking at somewhere between 10 to 14 projects in this last year and a half, including up to now, I guess.
So
far, I have not had to turn anybody away, thanks a large part to the budget that the council has dealt with.
Okay.
Thank
you. One more question through you to Mr. Miller. Maybe we should perhaps look at something to put in place as far as being retro or retroactivity, just so we have a more formalized process moving forward, so we kind of maybe don't get into this issue. And I don't know what that is. Obviously, you're familiar with the program.
Yes, through Chair, that's Councilman Zenko. I do know that Mr. Brady has a comment. He's ready to go here.
Mr. Brady?
Thank you, Councilor Zenko. The Council has provided staff with guidelines that we've brought to you and that you've put in place that allow us to move forward with these things in a sequential fashion, and we follow those guidelines quite zealously. And that allows us to do a number of things. A, make sure that the quality of the project are being maintained, but equally important, as the treasurer will be happy to hear, we don't expend monies that we don't have. And so therefore, up till now, that's not really been a problem because we've had some monies that have been left over the years, and we're very pleased that council has provided us funding to move forward. But as the programs expand and as the areas become more aware of it, we anticipate that at some point in time we may have some financial issues. But we always want to be able to be in the position, because we make this commitment to the applicants, that once you're approved, we have your money. And so that therefore once they finish, they simply bring it in and we process the check at that point in time, which is very important to the applicants, because they need to know that there's a commitment done on that behalf. I feel that to make that commitment, I have to actually have a process. And when people want to come in retroactively, I want there to be a little bit more to it, which is to come to council.
Thank you, Mr. Brady. Any other questions?
Thank you. Yes, just one other comment. I am going to be supporting the second option as well. And more so, the reasons why I was asking these questions is I do appreciate Mr. Bastia's improvements that he's done. You've done a beautiful job, and I'm happy to hear that it's met criteria and all of the standards. My concern is, you know, for the next person that this might happen and for that person who says, I just don't have time, proceeds and it may not fall within criteria. That's where I was getting at with this, but I am going to be supporting this second option of this report.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Councillor Luberts, did you have a comment?
Yes, thank you very much. I'm just looking at the option that we're just reading it through, and there's some discussion there about the regional council and if this the decision of the regional council is rendered, or if they are going to do something. So obviously it's going to be going to our regional council, and there's going to be some requests that this gentleman receive the same, as it sounds like we're going to support this evening. And I guess my question will go to either Mr. Miller or Mr. Brady. Is there something that this council can do to send a letter or send some kind of a memo to the regional council that we supported this report tonight, and we're to encourage the regional council to follow the same as this council?
Through the chair to Councillor Luberts. The region are well aware of the application, and in fact they're awaiting the outcome of this, so I will use the recommendation taken from tonight's to advance to the region. That's the indication the council supports. The reason it's going to the regional council is that they match funding, but they too are, they are going to be reviewing their programs in the future, but it falls out of normal process for them. Retroactivity is in CAP projects is outside of normal for the region as well. And so the staff at the region have indicated the regional council will make a determination. It's normally something that's within regional staff's ability through delegation to deal with, but because it's outside the norm, it's going to council.
And so they're waiting for our decision before they make their decision. Correct. So this is going to help.
That's so it. I would say it would.
And if I may, Mr. Chair,
certainly, Councilor Luberts.
Just to follow up on funding for this program. And Mr. Brady indicated that last year was a great year, and people are moving forward and they're requesting monies, and his department needs to know that if they have the approval, if an applicant gets approval, they need to know that the money is there. So I'd like to ask a question, Mr. Jansen. What would the procedure be, and how could we go about if Mr. Brady were to have a banner year again and ran out of money? Is there a problem with requesting more money be put into this program through our finance department?
Through the chair to Councillor Liebertz, we do operate with the reserve. I'm not sure if that's been mentioned again here tonight, but yes, this year we did add additional funds to that, and it could be considered again either an amendment during the year should the opportunity or need arise, or through next year's budget deliberations.
Thank you very much, and I'd like everybody to keep that in mind, that we could make an amendment to this year's budget if it's required. So hopefully it will be required. Let's put it that way, and it's nice to know that the option is there.
Are there any other questions or comments regarding Councillor Butler's motion for option number 2? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? That passes. I'll turn the chair back to you, Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next item on the agenda is new business inquiries. Does anybody have any? Seeing none, I'll move on to the... Oh. Moving on to business status report, any questions or comments? Seeing none, I return the chair back to you. Community and Development Services is now over. Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Butler, takes us to scheduling of meetings. Are there any meetings that we need to know about? Councillor Liebertz?
Yes. Wednesday evening, 5 o'clock, Infrastructure Services Subcommittee meeting, conference room, 3.
March the 9th? Wednesday, March the 9th?
Yes.
Okay. I should mention that the Chamber of Commerce is holding its State of Fort Erie a breakfast Thursday morning starting at 7:30, some ungodly hour. And I'm surprised to see that I get to speak less than the general manager of the Economic Development Corporation. Of course, we all know that that happens in any event. That's Thursday, November, March the 10th. Councillor McDermott, do you have your hand up? Councillor Butler, you had your hand up. And Councillor Zanko.
Thank you, Your Worship. We have a corporate services meeting scheduled here at Town Hall at 11 a.m. on March the 14th in Conference Room 2.
Other meetings? Then motion to adjourn.
Certainly. The Town of Fort Erie Council and Committee is hereby adjourned at 8:42 p.m. to reconvene in our next regular council meeting, Council and Committee meeting, I guess, on the 21st.
That's
March
correct.
21st all at 6 p.m.
All those in favor? That is carried.